This is Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC, and welcome to the program, folks. Another week has gone by. Another week, and Robbie, we were just interrupted. We had to wrap up our conversation, but Robbie, really, let's talk about this. So I'm in the office the other day, and I say, good morning, Vietnam. You know, I do the Robin Williams opening, and I get a bunch of blank stares. So then, Robbie, we immediately began to debate which were some of the, the best Robin Williams movies. And, Patch Adams. No, not that. The one I think that really escaped Oscar glory was Death to Smoochie. You're nodding. It's so good. Right? So good. And do you file that under Oscar So White? Like, is that hashtags White Oscars? Yeah, it's a dark. Well, and it's a purple dinosaur, right? So the premise of the movie, right, that he used to play Smoochie, and then I forget how it is. Or is it a dinosaur or a rhinoceros? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's right. So Smoochie is like the passé icon, right? The has been, and he's replaced by Edward Norton's. It's classic. It's great. It's this. All I can say is it's epic. You know, it's a Shakespearean drama basically. So, there you go. So the other thing that I'll tell you, folks, endless stories of funny things at work. You know, when you go to work, the best piece of advice I can give you, especially if you're a young person and you maybe haven't, really done the whole work thing yet, is to leave as much of your personality and private life at home. So at the law firm, when we have a new employee start, so their first day, we always have people start on a Monday, and we start every week with a big meeting every Monday morning at 8 o'clock. I do it a couple of reasons, right? One, it forces everyone to get out of bed and be there on Monday. And then you kind of have to wake people up right after the weekend. You know, not everybody's been listening to Sam Nation, so some people are a little sleepy. Then I give them my own recap of Sam Nation. And believe me, I'm a TGIM guy, folks. So when I'm delivering my morning soliloquy, people get alerted pretty quickly. So anyway, so we have our big Monday morning meeting, and we got a new employee. So what we do is first thing is we make him tell an embarrassing story. And the second thing is we go around the room, and we got 45, 46 employees now. So we all go around the room, we give our first name, and then we make the newbie remember all of our names, like go back and remember everybody's name. And so most people have the short-term memory of like 10-second Tom, speaking of great movies. Most people have no short-term memory. There's supposed to be like a trick to remembering people's names. You know this, Rob, right? You're supposed to like repeat the name 5 times in conversation, then you'll never forget that person's name. It's true, and it works. Try it. Somebody says, "Hi, my name is Cornelius." You then have to fit in Cornelius 5 times in the next, 3.5 sentences, and you should be totally good. You might also have a stutter. So anyway, so we have this. I do. You're nodding. Misty wants to hear this too. So we have this girl start, and so we tell her, "Hey, we need an embarrassing story." And she starts saying, "Well, okay, I really don't know." Typical beginning, right? And then says, "Well, there was this one time when I got really drunk and I got on my bicycle and I went down a hill and I crashed." Now, right, the first thing that I think of is how different is that story? What if somebody says they're in a car and did the same thing, right? I got drunk, I got in my car, and I cried. That's not a funny story. And as far as the vehicle code's concerned, there's not much of a difference about being on a bike versus, you know, being in a car. So really what she's admitting to everybody is, hi, I had a DUI, you know, in the works and crashed. So, you file that away under, that's not the embarrassing story you tell. The takeaway, folks, is that when your boss asks you to give an embarrassing story, it's like the interview, right? You say, what's your weakness? Lachey, you're nodding. You know that. You never answer. You don't really say, well, I wet my bed at night. You don't say that, right? Well, I'm not insinuating Lachey wets her bed at night. No, Robbie, no. So, too dedicated. Exactly. But what do you do when your boss asks you, or you're in an interview? This is a classic, right? This is a must. This is a life hack. Somebody asks you, what's your greatest weakness? My weakness is that I am just too damn dedicated. You know, you know what? I can't leave my desk. That's my weakness. You know, what else? I am so focused that I forget to eat. I don't go to the bathroom during the day. Like, those are the things that you say in an interview. You don't actually say, well, I have, you know, I'm a little ADD and sometimes I don't complete tasks fully. And you know, it could be true, but you don't say it. Yeah. I really like to take hour and 15 minute lunches. No. So the same is when your boss says, hey, you know, on your first day, tell an embarrassing story. You say, oh, you know, I was out with some friends and, you know, and I don't know. And I overpaid for a check. And then everybody looks, I mean, you don't. So that's a good question. Have we ever fired anybody on the basis of their first day story? Yes. Yes. Yeah, and the reason is that the story was in its entirety based on public urination. And, well, I got to draw the line somewhere, right? There is also somebody we canned on the basis of how poorly they performed the name game. And it was when, the guy couldn't remember anyone's name. To the point where it was like he had no effort to give it. So it's a good faith effort. But folks, what's scary is that there are people out there among us that have mad, crazy memory, right? I have this. Chris, is that you? Okay. Well, it's not me. I'll tell you that. I think the worst experience of my life was law school, where I basically didn't remember anything. And you kind of have to, right? So we had this one gal start a few weeks back, and she went and, were you there, Robbie? She remembered pretty much everybody's name. Robbie's got his hands up. He's like, got the praise going. And I'm envious. Can you imagine having a memory like that? I got to ask her what her trick was, but I think it comes naturally to people. The other thing, folks, if you've got a kid and you want to get them ready for corporate America, have them wait on tables. I think if you're a waiter, a waitress, you're out there, you got to remember a lot. And people come to you with their orders and you're not always writing it down. I think that builds memory. One of our best people besides this new girl, Rob, was this gal who was a waitress for a long time. And she knew everything. She was on it. Okay, so there it is. Just don't, if you get asked for your weaknesses in an interview, what do you do? You lead off with the strength. And if you're asked to give an embarrassing story, please, folks, please don't. Don't, nothing about DUIs and nothing about peeing in public. Rob, speaking of embarrassing, there's some girl in Sweden. Did you read about this? So apparently there's a gal who thinks, before I get to what her problem is, we're getting pretty accepting of the transgender stuff, aren't we? I mean, and it's a natural consequence of everybody talking about Kris Jenner. And you can't even use the word transition anymore without a snicker. Yeah, right. Somebody says transition, and you're like, can't laugh about that. Well, not when Trump's president, right, Rob? We can laugh about stuff again. So there's a gal. No, she doesn't think she's a man. She thinks she's a cat trapped in a human body. She's got some piercings, a little bit on her mouth, nothing crazy. But she walks around appears to be a tail of some kind. It's like, you know, felt or velveteen or whatever it is. She claims, now the interview, it's in Sweden, and the interview there, how do these people do it? If I had her on the program, I could not talk to her with a straight face. And this reporter incredibly maintains a complete straight face, asking her if she's got extra good vision or if her hearing is, you know, if she hears things that normal humans don't. I mean, oh, this is real. And it's apparently some condition where you look, there's more to the story. We'll touch on it briefly after the break, folks. Mice lady. It's a real thing. Mice people. Or wait, cat person. Whatever. But there's something here about mice. It's pretty funny. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC. Back after this. This is Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC. And we were just talking about this gal who thinks, well, she thinks she's a cat. Here's some of her quotes. Sometimes I hiss when meeting dogs on the street. And really, there's a video there, and she is in a crowded train station somewhere in Sweden, and she begins hissing, and the reporter, totally straight-faced, asks her what's going on, and she goes, there's a dog over there. Yeah, she's 20. She thought that she was a cat when she turned 16. I think that's when she discovered it, and she walks around, not always, but at home, she likes to walk around on all fours. What I thought was particularly great about this, folks, is that she claims she likes to sleep in the sink. I mean, I don't want to be rude here, but she looks pretty full bodied. I'm not sure what kind of a sink we're talking about. I mean, Rob, I don't know. Could she fit in your sink? Producer Robbie is shaking his head. Yeah, No, probably not. So, well, I'm not going to even go any further before I need to make a very important announcement. Folks, imagine you're walking through a train station. You're walking through that station, minding your own business, when all of a sudden, a human dressed as a cat attacks you and viciously bites you on the leg. What do you do? Well, for cat bites, dog bites, car accidents, any kind of injuries, there's only one name to trust, and that's my friend, Sweet James Bergener. Yes, the only personal injury attorney you will ever need. Just call him. If you've got any questions about a case that you think you've been injured in result of somebody else's stupidity or craziness or negligence, give him a call, 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit sweetjames.com. You know, there are cat bites, folks. If you think that's absurd, I mean, there are cat bites. And they can hurt, right? I mean, a cat bites you, it can hurt. You can get a scar, two little scars, to be precise. So, I've been thinking about this race. Folks, this political race, it's who can even keep track of it? Yeah, well, forget the primary. We've already moved on. South Carolina's next. Okay, so now where is this taking us? Folks, I have to tell you, the thing that the media is not picking up is the issue of immigration. And when they are picking up immigration, when the media is talking about immigration, they're fundamentally misunderstanding it. Okay, so let's look at the platforms, right? So the reason that Marco Rubio, Robot Marco, right? We had a robotic debate. Did you see that, Robbie? I guess he gave the same answer. He did three times. But the reason that the Republicans can't stand Rubio is he came in, he was elected. You remember who he ran against? He ran against an establishment Republican. It was Charlie Crist. And Charlie Crist, if you folks don't remember, he was a governor, a longtime governor of Florida. And he was a very middle of the road Republican. In fact, he was probably a rhino. I'm not talking about Smoochie. He was a rhino, which means a Republican in name only. You've heard that term. Rob's nodding. Good. Missy, have you heard that? Rhino? You heard that term? No. See? So, and we know he was a rhino because I think he loses the primary. You'll remember this better than me, Robbie. He loses the primary to Marco Rubio and then immediately ditches the Republican Party and runs as an independent and loses. Okay. So Charlie Crist, and then now he's out of politics, but I think he's even now registered as a Democrat. I got to look that up, but I know he's fully out of the Republican Party. But the reason that Rubio won Florida was, and this is the last election that he ever had, right? This was the last election because he's a first term senator. The reason he won Florida is because he was endorsed by conservative people. Phyllis Schlafly, okay? He was endorsed by conservative thinkers. And one of the things that he ran on was no amnesty. Now, the opponents of no amnesty, right? And amnesty, what are we talking about? We're forgiving the people that are here illegally and basically saying, we got to keep these people here. We're not going to send them back. And the opponents of amnesty, right? Their argument is largely tuned to this is racism. If you oppose immigration, you want to send Hispanic people, and that's what it's always about, right? It's always framed as Hispanic people. If you're sending Hispanics back, you're a racist. You in America, I mean, the premise is if you don't want illegal immigration, you're a racist. And I don't want to confuse too much amnesty with immigration restrictions, because I recognize that they're two separate issues. But for the most part, the purists, the people that are closest to the no illegal immigration position, are also advocates of amnesty. So you could say that the people that are against amnesty are very orthodox when it comes to conservative ideology related to immigration. That is what Marco Rubio ran on. That was his platform. That's how he got elected into the Senate in a relatively conservative but not evangelical state. Let me be clear about that. Florida is not an evangelical state. But it is a kind of a conservative state. They don't have an income tax. They're a state that has a lot of some very Democratic counties. We know that. Mostly around Palm Beach, Miami. But it is a conservative state. So to win the state, you got to be a conservative guy. What happened? He goes into Washington. He goes in and he does exactly what the public is fed up with, which is You hear the politician speak, you hear him make a promise, and then what does he do? Yeah, he gets sworn into office and immediately begins to do something completely different. So if you'll remember, folks, the Gang of Eight, and this was the Republican senators got together with the Democratic senators, and they agreed that they were going to pass immigration reform that included sweeping amnesty. And there was Marco Rubio standing shoulder to shoulder with Schumer, with Chuck Schumer, the Democrat from New York. And there it was. I mean, for me, okay, as a conservative, his fate was sealed. But he did something more than that. It became a symbol of something that has been repeating itself over and over and over again, which is that conservative voters, and folks, I don't mean Republicans, I mean conservative voters. And the difference is that it's not people that will vote for the Republican no matter what. It's people who are issues-based, and immigration is their number one issue. And you run the statistics, you know, Pew did a research on this where it's like 62% of voters out there, immigration, number one issue. And that is where Trump is hitting a nerve. And it's based on a few different factors, and it's going to take a little bit of time to suss it all out. But I want to do that here. And I want to look at what's going on in Europe, because Europe is a bellwether. European politics tend to be more extreme than ours, believe it or not. I don't think it's an absurd example to tell you that the 30s were a decade of strongmen in the world. You had Hitler, you had Mussolini. You had Chiang Kai-shek in Taiwan and China. But you also had, arguably, the strongest, most authoritarian president, FDR. Now, we're not allowed to talk about that because he's, God. But he was. He threatened to pack the Supreme Court. Right? Supreme Court didn't want to go along with him. He says, you know what? Screw you. I'm going to just keep adding justices until there are so many people on the court that will listen to me and I'll get my way with my agenda. FDR created the modern welfare state. Okay. And ran roughshod over Congress. I mean, he was a dictator that fit his time. But he was no Hitler. Okay. So it is one example. I think there are many others I could give you, but there is one example of where Europe tends to take the extreme. And there are plenty of reasons for it. And part of it has to do is that there's a lot more conflict that builds up around small clusters, small nationalities. You got little countries. So after the break, I want to explain to you where the Trump phenomenon is coming from. We're going to talk a little bit about history and then a little bit about the future and see where it all comes together. Stay tuned. Let's have some fun with this. Sam Berjofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC. In the days of 39, oh, please leave the Vendetta open. Frederico Locker, dead and gone. Bullet holes in the cemetery wall. The black car, the body of the beer. Welcome to the program, Sam Berjofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC. And so we were just talking about Europe is a bellwether for political bellwether and cultural bellwether for us, it's a place where things tend to happen a little bit in advance of things that happen here, but oftentimes bigger and badder. I gave an example. FDR, he was our dictator in the 30s. Europe had their guys, but, we had ours, but a slightly toned down version. I want to be clear, substantially toned down version, right? I think that metaphor can get misused. So where is Europe vis-a-vis immigration? So I'll tell you, I'll sum it up like this, and then we'll get into the details. Not good. Not good, folks. If you think that we are up the creek, and you know which creek I'm talking about, with no paddle, boy, are you glad you don't live in Europe. Now, let me give you an example of what I mean. There are so many immigrants coming from North Africa into Sweden that they are considering taking away, confiscating. I'm talking full Bernie Sanders style, confiscating people's vacation homes or second residences just to be able to pay for and to house the migrants. Think about that, folks. A Western democratic country from which many of us have ancestry, right? They are going to be confiscating, they're actively considering confiscating private property to pay for people who arguably, and let me finish my thought, who arguably don't belong there. Okay, now let's talk about it. On the left, it's being framed as a humanitarian crisis, right? So you have all these displaced people, these refugees, and they've got to be taken care of. Well, you just can't let them die, right? You can't let them, if they stay in their country, they're goners. And I get it. It's a compelling argument. Now, what do you do? Two kinds of immigration that you have, right? You have immigration where you say, all right, they're refugees. We will grant you front door access into our country, but it's some limited number. And mind you, in the U.S., we're not even able to do that because we don't have a door. We just have wide open spaces in the Rio Grande. So, you know, when we talk about building a wall, we at least, you know, we build a wall, we put some doors in it, and we at least know who's going through those doors. In Europe, ironically, the same state that is advocating for the absorption of immigration, of refugees from war-torn Libya, the Sudan, okay, Iraq, and so forth. Those same folks have gone to great extents to fortify Europe. The European Union has a central command for protecting its borders. And through a variety of means, those borders are protected. Now, some of it are natural borders, right? You've got the Mediterranean, for example, separating Africa, North Africa, from Europe. Okay? But even in areas where there are pockets of European-controlled land in North Africa, like there is in an area of Morocco that belongs to Spain, they've literally built a huge wall. It's a huge-ass wall. It's like Donald Trump wall. I don't know if Mexico paid for it. Don't know, but it's a wall. So the deal is the government hasn't given people a door to get through this wall. Okay. And these people are swimming, taking boats and dying in the process of getting to Europe. And why are they coming? They're coming. Well, there's two reasons, folks. There's two reasons. One, they're coming because ostensibly their country is war torn at home. But there's another reason that is, the best way I can explain it is to tell you this. If you Google in and put in Arabic, Robbie, you read this. If you Google in Arabic, refugee asylum, your top search result is going to be Sweden and the Swedish homepage for asylum seekers. And why? Why is it? Well, people want to go to Sweden because the word is out that the benefits, that the welfare benefits in Sweden are the best. It is the promised land of refugee seekers. Because you know what you're guaranteed? You're guaranteed about 200 euros a month, a little nice little stipend. You get a bicycle, okay, which in a metropolitan area is really all you need to get around. You get a nice bed to stay in. You know, IKEA is running out of mattresses because Yeah, IKEA is, you know, it's founded and based in Sweden. And they're running out of mattresses, folks, because of all these immigrants. So they're and Sweden is a small country. They have had, in the last year and a half, 100,000 immigrants into a country. Now, these are not just immigrants. These are not everyone. These are refugees. And the country's just 9.5 million people. I mean, those numbers are staggering. 9.5 million, isn't that like the greater LA area, Robbie, give or take? I mean, this is an enormous amount of people. And now what do you do? How do you absorb this? How is this? Is this even like the immigration that we know? Well, the answer is, this isn't the kind of immigration that we know yet. But it is the kind of immigration that Americans fundamentally understand and know that they don't want. I'll give you an example. You have whole neighborhoods, and Trump was one of the first candidates to call England out on this, right? It had to do with no-go zones for police, where there were broad areas of public housing that are completely dominated by radical, well, orthodox Muslims who have their Sharia councils and systems of government. They don't want outsiders in. Okay. And the police are afraid to go in there for fear of getting abused, hurt, and even killed. And the reason is you've got a section of society now. You've invited these, you know, if you're Sweden or you're Holland and you're England, you've invited immigrants from a completely different area of the world that have a different culture, a different cultural paradigm. And this is key, and this is something that we as good-natured Americans don't understand because it's not the basis of our notion of how immigration works, right? We believe in assimilation. At least we should. But the problem is that Europe was founded, modern Europe, political, modern Europe, going back to the time when my parents lived in Holland in the 70s, modern Europe was founded on a policy of radical multiculturalization. It was a policy of the government to bring in as many multicultural people and to honestly, frankly, dilute the makeup of these countries. It was stated. I mean, it was a political objective. And the problem is, you know, you have people writing in this article now, and these are Swedes who are folks. I mean, it doesn't get more. Sweden has the most comprehensive welfare state of any country in Western Europe. They do. They have cradle to grave welfare. But here's the deal. It's going broke. It's going broke because there's a flood of people who are taking and none of them are putting back in. And the interesting thing is that arguably the reason that Europe in the past has sought immigration is not just to kind of dilute the cultural makeup and modernize itself and reinvent itself, but also to offset their fledgling population numbers. I mean, people in Europe aren't having kids. They aren't. And so in order to sustain, how does welfare work? Folks, it's a Ponzi scheme, right? It's a Ponzi scheme. You've got to, for every person that is taking from the system, there've got to be two or three or four that are paying in. So it's no different than if you're Bernie Madoff and you know, you're taking from new investors and then kind of funneling that money down the line to the old guys, keeping them happy. It's the same thing. Modern welfare. It is. And when you don't have enough people paying in, when your birth rates are decreasing so that there's one kid per every two adults, as the population ages and needs full-time support, there aren't enough workers to sustain the program. But the challenges that in importing, and this is the thing, and I'll talk about this. I got to talk about this for one last segment after the break. Importing a particular type of people has created a permanent underclass and has created more welfare recipients, more unemployment, and the statistics back it up. And here's the takeaway, folks. For the first time, liberal Europe, they outdo us in crazy, folks. Trust me, they are full Bernie Sanders. People there have had enough. They've had enough. And they're rebelling. The story is there's these far right parties that for years have been in the fringe. And they are beginning to rise and dominate in early polling and in early races. And there's going to be, I predict, folks, there's going to be a tectonic political shift in Europe in the next 2 to 3 years. But it's a lesson for us. Back after this, Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC. Program, Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC. So where does a welfare state begin to break down? When your intention was to import workers into the country, they're going to help sustain, right, going to help you sustain welfare. And the problem is, I mean, let's look at the statistics. Germany, unemployment in Germany, native-born unemployment, people born in Germany, 4.5%. Foreign-born, 7.9%, almost 8%. Okay? Almost double. France, native-born. People born in France, 9.1% unemployment, right? Well, they've been practicing Bernie Sanders for the last few years. So this is... You know what they're foreign-born? Rob, you know, foreign-born unemployment in France, 16%. Okay? Native-born in Spain, 22%, and this is insanity. And Spain, look, folks, look no further than the disastrous consequences of the kind of socialism that, you know, that certain people that want a certain candidate are, look at this, foreign-born, 33.3% unemployment. One in three foreign-born people in Spain, unemployed. Now, who are these people? Well, statistics bear out that they're predominantly people who are from Muslim countries. Okay? I mean, the statistics bear that out. And the next thing is to kind of understand, what are these people doing with all this free time? Right? This welfare state. It's like kids. I mean, if you give your kids an allowance and let them sit around the house and not do anything, well, from my experience, nothing good comes of that. So if you give a bunch of people money to live and a place to stay and a bicycle, like they do in Sweden, and say, go have fun, what happens? Well, crazy stuff happens, right? And I'll go through some of the things that there is a Dutch politician who was one of the first to ring the alarm bells on what is happening in Europe. And his name is Geert Wilders. And Wilders, you've probably seen him. He's been on Fox and some of the other shows. And really, I think he was banned from entering England. You know, they tried to ban Donald Trump. They actually successfully banned Wilders, which is crazy if you consider, you know, Great Britain is the land of the Magna Carta and, you know, freedom and all that, you know, nonsense. They're not. I mean, because Wilders was one of the first people to sound the alarm on Muslim immigration to Holland. And why? Well, he made this little movie, called it Fitna, And you would have thought that it was the most incendiary, radical thing ever to happen. So I'll tell you, folks, some of the things that are in the movie that help kind of frame why there's a concern in Western Europe with this kind of development of with this kind of immigration. Well, let's talk about it. In one scene in the movie, there's a little girl who is somewhere in Western, appears to be somewhere in Western Europe. And she appears to be Muslim. And she says, are you familiar with Jews? And then the teacher or the parent says, because they are what? And she answers, they are apes and pigs. Crazy. Who said they are so? Allah. Where did he say this? In the Quran. Now, clearly that's radical. I mean, I don't think we know. I don't know any Muslims who actually believe that. But there are people in Europe that have been invited into Europe who do believe that. And we know it because, I mean, we only know about the headline attacks, don't we, Robbie? We know there have been 11 terrorist attacks in France since December of last year. There was a stabbing in December of last year. Then there was a Dijon attack. I think there was another attack in Paris sometime January, a year ago January. There's a train attack. And you know, in France, Jews are literally asking themselves whether they should wear their religious garb in the street because they're being attacked. There's that video of a guy, we'll add a little Second Amendment into this, where he applied for his concealed carry permit. There's a video of him getting attacked by a street gang, what appears to be some you know, Muslim youth. They're shouting anti-Semitic epithets at him, and he pulls out his gun. Yeah, that changed the conversation pretty quick. It's a great leveler. But others haven't been so lucky. And there was a Jewish teacher that was stabbed. People being singled out for their religion. Europe, the bastion of tolerance. Holland, France. I mean, these are countries when I grew up thinking, what is a tolerant country? I think of Holland. But it's not that way anymore. And, you know, you remember Theo van Gogh? He was the grandson of Vincent van Gogh, the famous painter. And he made a movie, something criticizing Islam. And he was attacked. He was killed. He was shot to death by an assassin who did it because he was guided by God to do it. And it's stifling free speech. There's another Dutch politician. You know, I know a lot about this because my folks lived there for a number of years. I mean, there was another Dutch politician that was murdered. He was a conservative politician. He was openly gay. And he was murdered simply because of the things that he said. And the discussion in Europe is turning now. The recognition that you can't just have an open door policy. Let everyone in. Not vet them. They have no idea. Robbie, you know, they don't have, there are a bunch of kids coming in with quotes, right? Because they're really 21, 22, but they're telling them they're 17 so that their asylum gets fast tracked. But these are all fighting aged guys. The attackers at the Paris terrorist attack, the ringleader came and went as a refugee, in and out and in and out. And so when Donald Trump says, folks, this is the takeaway here. When he says we have an immigration problem, we need to build a wall and we need to know who's coming in here. And I open up the Boston Globe and I read from a column that's there about how Trump is he's just doing this for the, you know, he's just a racist, xenophobic bigot. The problem is that no matter how much the political class wants to classify this as xenophobic bigotry, fear of outsiders, these fears are in part rational, and there is so close to us, right? Culturally, and Europe's not far away. There is a living, breathing example of what an open door, a sudden open door policy can produce. And when you have people coming over who aren't vetted, and we've seen that people stopped at the border, believe it or not, occasionally the Border Patrol does stop people at the border. And there was an article this week, folks, this is real time stuff, talking about how there has been an upsurge of an uptick of people stopped by Border Patrol crossing the border illegally who are not from South America or Central America or Mexico, but rather from Middle Eastern countries. And you can't write off the call for tighter border security as xenophobia. You can't write it off that way. Well, people are trying, right? A lot of the media, they're trying. They're trying to paint it that way. And so Bloomberg is talking about joining the race. It's going to be interesting politically. The thing to remember is, as long as Trump stays on the issue of immigration, or another candidate stays on the issue of immigration, they will have traction with the fundamental section of Americans. And these are good, honest Americans who simply want to be safe. They're not bigots. They're not racists. They read what's happening in Europe. They read about pockets of immigrants that aren't assimilating, that are perpetually on welfare. They're reading things like women basically being kept home as slaves, not allowed to go out. What are some of these statistics? 84% of Pakistanis and 83% of Moroccans think Sharia should be the law of the land. And those, by the way, those groups form the biggest and largest chunks of immigrants in places like England and Holland and France. And Sharia, let's remind ourselves what Sharia is. Death penalty for females who commit adultery. I don't like that personally. I don't know. Death penalty for homosexuality. In 10 countries, in 10 Muslim countries, death penalty for being gay. And, maybe some guys will like this. I mean, women must obey their husbands. They did a little research on this. In Afghanistan, 94% of men think that wives should obey their husbands. So that'd be good on Valentine's Day, wouldn't it? And this is, I'll tell you, folks, this is a little friendly announcement from Sam Nation. Tomorrow is Valentine's Day. And unless you come from Afghanistan, probably tell your wife it's going to be on Monday or wherever you want it to be. You got to do something for your wife, your loved one, your significant other. So I don't have any suggestions, Robbie. I'm out. I'm out. But just reminding everybody, don't forget it's Valentine's Day. Folks, I love you all. I miss you already. I can't wait to be back next week. Lots more to talk about. And I'm going to talk more about the race next week and what's going on with all these primaries. Didn't even get to it today. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC.